The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I am Avra Lewis with the North Carolina Reading Service, and for the next half hour, I will be reading to you from Essence Magazine. The first article is titled, "The Black New Orleans History You Didn't Know Shaped America." A historian and proud daughter of the city reflects on its rich heritage and celebrates the cultural contributions, fortitude, and vision of its people. At the southern reach of the United States map and about 50% below sea level lies New Orleans. It's a predominantly black port city surrounded by water and known for its music, food, and entertainment. New Orleans' vibrant artistic expression, collective resistance, and cultural innovation are rooted in black people's survival within what was once the largest slave market in the country. To understand the role of slavery in the creation of America is to recognize the foundational impact New Orleans has had on the country and the world at large. Today, alongside NOLA's historical contributions, its black influence can be heard in the bounce samples that propel songs to global hit status, tasted in the widespread effort to recreate Creole cuisine, and experienced through the social freedoms made possible by all black people in New Orleans and their determination to thrive. Won't bow down. Authentic change happens from the ground up. Before the French colonial founding of New Orleans in 1718, the indigenous land was a trading post known as Bull Bancha, a Choctaw word meaning place of many tongues. Native American tribes cultivated the swampland, coexisting with land, spirit, and water. In 1719, the first ship bearing Africans trafficked from the Senegambia region arrived in present-day Algiers Point. Their forced labor built New Orleans as they drained swamps, constructed levees, grew rice, harvested sugarcane, crafted ironwork, and laid bricks. These early arrivals also managed to retain their West African culture. Many of them refused to adapt to oppression in their new land. Their defiance is often proclaimed in black masking Indian tradition as "won't bow down, don't know how." It was in this spirit that Charles Deslondes led more than 500 enslaved people in an 1811 rebellion. They intended to establish the city as a free black republic. Although they met a brutal fate, their resistance was recorded as one of the largest slave revolts in American history. Many elements of New Orleans culture stem from the African resistance to Code Noir, the 1724 Black Codes of Louisiana. These codes attempted to regulate the lives of Black New Orleans with the enforcement of Catholicism as the mandatory religion, resulting in a large population of black Catholics and Sunday designated as rest day for enslaved people. Enslaved Africans and free people of color used Sundays for ceremonial gatherings, holding drumming circles at Congo Square in the Treme neighborhood. Marie LaVue, voodoo queen and devout Catholic, lived nearby and was reportedly a Congo Square regular. Most Black New Orleans residents still regard Congo Square as holy land. It is used for spiritual and musical events. The origins of jazz, the roots of American music, are found in drumming circles of Congo Square, the only place in New Orleans where enslaved Africans could gather openly for an extended period. Enslaved people in other parts of the Americas were banned from using drums, but they were allowed to retain the instrument in New Orleans. The drum was at the center of activities in Congo Square. Enslaved and free gathered to practice ancestral chants, call and response, improvisation, and rhythmic patterns that laid the groundwork for jazz. And from jazz came everything. R&B, blues, rock and roll, bounce, pop, and hip hop. Jazz was one of the America's first original art forms, and Louis Armstrong was arguably America's first Black superstar. New Orleans launched modern music from the drums to the beat. The Great Migration of Black Southerners to northern regions took our artists nationwide, and the sound followed, spreading the artistic influences of New Orleans into the mainstream. There was the early work of Mahalia Jackson, Fats Domino, and Alan Toussaint, and also the transformative sounds of Trombone Shorty and Wynton Marsalis. Hip-hop brought another cultural shift when Cash Money Records took over for the 99 and the 2000, and Master P showed the music industry how to slang a record out the back of your trunk. Building community, often regarded as the oldest Black neighborhood in the country and located on land once occupied by a plantation, Faubourg Tremy, home of Congo Square, evolved into an ironic reclamation of history as free people of color acquired over 80% of the property. They were wealthy. They had their own businesses, says Fatima Sheikh, author of Economy Hall, The History of a Free Black Brotherhood, who has family roots in Tremy. They were active in government right after the Civil War. They were registering people to vote in 1865, 5 years before we had a constitutional amendment. So we had that kind of power. That's the part that's not in history. We are seen as the victim of history, but we were very active members in the creation of history. St. Augustine Church, the oldest Black Catholic parish in the U.S., is a Tremy landmark founded by free people of color. They collectively purchased pews in which enslaved people could worship, an unprecedented act. Some notable parishioners were Homer Plessy, plaintiff in Plessy versus Ferguson, separate but equal case, Sidney Bechet, jazz musician, and Venerable Henrietta Delisle, founder of Sisters of the Holy Family. Delisle also co-founded Sisters of the Presentation of the Blessed Virgin Mary with financial support from Tommy Lafon, one of the wealthiest Black people of the 19th century. It was later renamed Sisters of the Holy Family, and Delisle is now on the path to canonization as the first Black American saint. Cooperative economic, New Orleans' large population of free people of color created social and political advancements 100 years for the civil rights movement. Dr. Louis Charles Rowe Dennys founded the New Orleans Tribune in 1864. It's the oldest black daily newspaper in the country. Economy Hall was a free black brotherhood in Trimmy that revolutionized musical, political, and social change. They tried to get rights for everybody in the community, and that's what was going on there before it was a musical venue, says Shake. It was a place where people were trying to uplift one another. The Economy Society paid dues for member burials when white funeral homes declined, honoring the dead through a jazz funeral. The jazz funeral procession begins with a slow dirge as mourners march toward the final resting place, followed by an upbeat tempo with dancing and cutting loose to send off the deceased properly. The casket brass band and family form the first line, the community following them in second line. Today, second lines are a regular Sunday ritual independent of jazz funerals. So often, New Orleans culture is seen as just entertainment, but there's a lot of spiritual and healing work that's taking place in these traditions, specifically second lines, says New Orleans native Edward Buckles Jr., the filmmaker who directed the documentary Katrina Babies. In my 10 years of documenting this tradition, I have witnessed kids and social aid and pleasure club members feeling like superstars on a Sunday, even if just for those few hours. They're all there releasing something. Here we take the weight of the world we carry and create a sense of freedom in how we gather, mourn, and celebrate. Second line Sundays often cross under the bridge on Claiborne Avenue, where the Trimmy neighborhood meets the historic 7th Ward. It's where Black New Orleans routinely congregates, now under painted concrete columns where oak trees once stood. This avenue was a Black Wall Street lined with Black-owned businesses during Jim Crow segregation. But in the 1960s, a highway was constructed that cut through this thriving district under discriminatory urban renewal policies. Despite this, Black New Orleanians gather on Claiborne on Sundays. They celebrate Mardi Gras Day. They witness the handmade suits of the Black masking Indians, honoring the history of Africans who escaped enslavement and Native Americans who aided them. What people don't understand is that the Black community in New Orleans has been strong for hundreds of years, says Shake. That has resulted in solid support of the city's Black-owned businesses. Across Claiborne is the renowned Jokey Chase restaurant, where Leah Chase and her Creole cuisine fed a community and a movement, offering a haven for activists like Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. to meet. Writing for Freedom, New Orleans also played a crucial role in advancing civil rights and education. The New Orleans Four of Leona Tate, Tessie Prevost, Gail Etienne, and Ruby Bridges bravely led the desegregation of public schools as little girls and prompted shifts toward desegregation and racial equality in our country's school systems. Xavier University of Louisiana and HBCU also helped the cause as the only historically Black Catholic university in the nation and a leader in STEM, it was central institution for activism. I became of counsel for the law firm that represented the civil rights movement in New Orleans called Norman C. Francis, J.D., retired Xavier University president of 47 years and the longest serving university president in the U.S. Xavier's civil rights activists included students arrested during sit-in protests. Francis supported their civil disobedience. I said that's the thing to do. He recalls Rudy Lombard, Ph.D., the courageous local core chairman and a New Orleans native, entering his office with a request for Xavier to shelter the Freedom Riders. They had been brutalized in Alabama and denied hotel rooms, Rudy said. They've gotta have a place to stay, Francis recalls. The first group of cab drivers came in with the Freedom Riders, all bloody and so forth, and we had housed them in secrecy on the third floor of the dormitory. One of the Freedom Riders, Jerome, quote-unquote, Big Duck Smith, founder of the Tambourine and Fan Youth Organization, played a prominent role in American history when he met with then Attorney General Robert Kennedy in 1963 and fearlessly asserted, "What you are asking us young Black people to do is pick up guns against people in Asia while you have continued to deny us our rights here." Following that meeting, Kennedy proposed the Civil Rights Act. A personal witness. My own identity was not formed by the state textbooks or U.S. history classes that have often omitted our narratives and contributions. Rather, it was solidified by my live experience growing up as a Black native New Orleanian. Outside the doorstep of my predominantly Black New Orleans East neighborhood, I internalized the Black history around me and saw myself in the legacy of our ancestors and cultural bearers. I now recognize us in everything around me, and I know with certainty that the story of America is not complete without the story of New Orleans. As residents of a global tourist destination that has miraculously maintained its mystique and cultural sovereignty, New Orleans often live in our own world while influencing the world around us. In 2019, I crafted the phrase, "New Orleans is a Black woman," as a metaphor for how my home is so widely imitated, yet so often goes overlooked and uncredited for all that she has given our nation. It is time we give this Black woman her just due. The next article is titled Full Circle with Frankie Beverly. As our first ever Essence Festival closer preps to retire from live performance, we offer the legendary crooner his flowers as he returns to our stage one last time. With a soulful sound and a signature look ingrained in our communal grown folks culture, Frankie Beverly is definitely linked with summer, then, now, and forever. The music of Maze featuring Frankie Beverly is the soundtrack of warm dusk, spent cruising local side streets with the windows down and the speakers turned on high. Beverly's voice conjures memories of late afternoons seated in a sunny corner of the extended family's spacious backyard, eavesdropping on grown folks' business being discussed at the cooler while the aroma of an active grill fills the air. The group's songs trigger muscle memory of doing the electric slide on freshly cut grass, forming soul train lines in the living room, and enjoying slow dances under the stars. So, it's no surprise that the legendary performer is returning to the pinnacle of summer, the Essence Festival of Culture, for our 30th anniversary. He will be receiving his flowers as a legacy entertainer for one last time, commanding the very stage he helped build from its inception. I haven't been on the Essence stage in a little while, but it feels good to be asked to come back, Beverly says ahead of his final performance at our festival. The crooner and his iconic band close out Sunday night during our inaugural music festival in 1995 and yearly for the next 14 years. Now they will be honored on that same stage for all they've contributed to the culture when Essence contacted us and wanted to honor me, I really couldn't say no, Beverly states. We have a long and rich history. The Essence Festival is a big part of my career. That illustrious career, punctuated by the 9 certified gold albums and multiple entries on the R&B charts, has taken place on the stages across the world. Frankie Beverly, front and center in his all-white linen, accompanied by the legendary Maze, has dazzled audiences on dozens of tours for more than 5 decades. Since 1970, Beverly has barred his raw soul on stage with his distinct soulful vocals, always accompanied by the live band. Their sound has shaped the very concept of soul for the millennial generation and beyond. But Beverly's journey as a performer began long before that. I grew up in church, and even as a child, I loved singing, he says, of his upbringing in Philadelphia. My grandparents loved to hear me sing. It took hold, and I found myself wanting to sing all the time. That desire led him to form his own doo-wop group, The Blenders, in his teenage years. He later pivoted to team with a band instead, The Butlers. A move to California, a rebrand to the name Raw Soul, and a chance encounter led to the band opening for Marvin Gaye on tour. The group eventually altered its name to Maze at Gaye's astute suggestion. There's no way Frankie Beverly and Maze could have predicted that first time he and his bandmates hit the stage, the decades of memorable moments they would create together. But Beverly always knew he was home when he was singing. Since his earliest days as a recording artist, Beverly has created anthems that resonate. From 1977's Happy Feelings to 1980's Joy and Pain to perhaps his most enduring hit, 1981's Before I Let Go, Beverly's music has always captured the elation, disappointment, and mixed emotions of love found and lost. Just as powerful Now as it was in the 70s, his music has remained a staple, and tickets to his shows have been coveted over the decades. I think my music has maintained a consistency across generations because God blessed me to write my music from the heart and not what the latest trend was, the singer reflects. It stays current no matter what generation. Beverly's music has weathered the emergence of new genres, the disappearance of hard copy media, and the move to streaming services, and it will surely endure through whatever the next phase of musical innovation proves to be. But the singer, now 77, has chosen 2024 as the year he bids farewell to live performing. His exit from center stage marks the end of an era defined by our aunties, uncles, and peers filling into stadiums and amphitheaters decked in all white linen to emulate Frankie Beverly and Maze's signature performance look. They were ready to sip wine, link arms, and belt out classics along with the Titan of Soul, and two, as his silken vocals command, feel that happy feeling. But as Beverly assures us, this goodbye isn't forever. Though he will no longer tour, the group will rebrand at Maze, honoring Frankie Beverly. And he says he may pop in from time to time to stay connected to his bandmates and to the loyal fan base that he feels has faithfully showered him with love and blessings for 50 plus years. Music is who I am, he explains. I have never done anything else. Music is the love of my life. You just don't exit from love. The next article is titled The Essence Effect. Essence Festival has redefined New Orleans as a hub for culture and entertainment over the past 30 years. Last year's event created 3,605 jobs. Last year's event contributed $327 million to the local economy. Last year's attendees boosted local spending by $120 million. The next article is titled, If Not For My Girls. My girls are my chosen sisters. They are my source of feel-good energy. They root for me, and I lose my voice rooting for them. We lift each other up as we climb. We are each other's lifelines. My girls are my laughter, my tears, my trials, and my triumphs. We go through everything together. They tell me the truth, straight, no chaser. Yes, my girls give me life. If one of us makes it, we all make it. Together we reign with all the black girl magic you can stand. Well, we have run out of time for today's episode of Essence. We hope you enjoyed it and be sure to listen next time. I am Ava Lewis, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Essence is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.